This is Low Budget, a show for the working class of San Diego, with Mark Chambers.
So, what are you up to now, Mark? You're digging graves?
And Todd Perry.
Why is the carpet all wet, Todd?
On 103.7 Free FM.
Welcome to the show, everybody. My name is Mark. That's Todd.
Yes.
How's everybody doing tonight?
I don't know. It's like Groundhog Day, you know?
It's a beautiful night here in San Diego. 858-410-1037 is the number. Low Budget FM. Ooh, okay, just stop the music. It's fine. Lowbudgetfm.com if you ever want to, reach out to us via the socials.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Facebook? I'm not on the socials, so I don't know. I think it's facebook.com/lowbudgetfm.
It means you get to reach out to me, and then also at lowbudgetfm on Twitter.
That's on Twitter. Now, which one's Twitter?
That's the place where you have 140 characters to make a point.
Okay. And the Facebook is the other one.
Right. You have all the characters you want, photos, and then basically you're talking to everybody you went to high school with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell you what, sometimes we come in and we do the show and I'm pumped to do the show. And then sometimes I do the show because the light comes on and then Pete points at me through the window.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm on that plane tonight. Can you give me some kind of pump? I mean, I'm in the dark. I've literally been in the dark for the past 2 days because all my light bulbs burnt out at my apartment.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to get over to I don't know where they even sell that kind of thing. I usually move so often. I don't have to worry about how to change light bulbs.
Well, you know,
I'm literally in the dark. I'm in the dark because I don't get any information because I'm not on social media. I don't know what's going on. And I'm here. I'm supposed to. The program director is always like, you know more. You have to know more than the audience, right? And I'm like, I don't know more. I don't even know more than you, Todd.
Well, I think you need to do some kind of reverse thing where actually you know more because you know less.
Oh, and so how do I do that?
Well, I mean, it's a weird rhetorical trick. You have to say, you know, all you people out there, you're sitting there and you're being indoctrinated by all the fake news out there. Mm-hmm. You're being indoctrinated by all the spin out there on Twitter. You're being told what to think by people. But oh no, Mark Chambers from Florida, he thinks for himself.
You think you know better just because you read things on the internet? You think you have a complete worldview just because you read what's trending on Facebook?
Mm-hmm.
But do I have to then back up why I feel I have a complete worldview?
No.
Or am I just so thoroughly enraged them by then that they wouldn't listen even if I tried?
No, you just enrage them, and then you settle back down into your kind of frozen dogmatic views that you had a month ago when you stopped hearing anybody else's opinion, and then you just roll with those.
Okay.
Because you don't really need to let anything new in or anything new out. You could just sit there, you know, like Chambers the majestical iceberg.
I almost feel like you're kind of being derisive.
Well, it's like, you know, sometimes people see like a petrified tree,
you
know, or something that was like after Mount Vesuvius came through and there was those people that were just like stopped forever that died. But you see, like, their bodies encased in molten lava. And there's a time and place that has been preserved.
Yeah.
Or like, when someone is molested at a certain age and then psychologically they stop developing at a certain point.
Jesus Christ.
You are May of 2017 forever.
So I can, you know, like, in 20 years from now, I can go on TV and give interviews about what it was like in May of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Because that's where you are.
Yeah, that's where I'll be.
You're
Does
like
that mean
Ice
I get
Man.
To stay the same age forever?
No, unfortunately, you decay and get older at the same thing. It's kind of like when you see an old guy and he's got like a pompadour. Because like he just stopped rethinking his hairdo in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do have the same hair that I had when I was like 8 years old.
Yeah, that's disappointing for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's more of a benefit at this point. I mean, I feel like once you hit a certain point, they're just excited that you've got the hair. They don't really care how you're styling it.
Who's they?
You know, people.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one remaining source of information. which is proving valuable, more valuable than I would have thought at first. And I, as soon as I saw it, I thought, I know I have to take this to Todd, because Todd strikes me as the kind of guy who likes to do his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd, you have a lucrative home-based business.
Yes, I do.
As they say.
Yeah.
And you have this, this enterprise as well.
I feel like that's used to just talk about mothers that sell like wishing crystals.
Yeah. You're making candles and putting them on Etsy.
Yeah, but I feel like what I'm doing is a little more substantial.
That's a home-based business. I believe that's how the IRS would refer to what you do.
Oh, the IRS. Don't get me started.
Oh, God. And so as someone who likes to blaze their own trail.
Yeah. Amongst other things.
And who you know, does things like build a wall.
Yes, I just built a wall, but I paid for it.
Yeah, okay. You didn't make your neighbors pay for it?
Well, no. So what you missed was on Facebook, I put a photo of a wall. I pushed out. I did a home construction thing, and I built a really kind of cool wall around part of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And then first comment on Facebook when I shared the picture was, did you get federal funds for this?
Mm.
And I said, I build Mexico, and no, they're not going to pay for it.
Mm.
I got a lot of likes on that.
You'll get that money from them somehow, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something came across my email. I got an email forward. People have realized this is the last remaining way to get new information in.
Well, I mean, that's like, again, that puts you in the ranks of my 70-year-old father that sends me email forwards that are just about like Hillary's enjoyment of burning the flag.
Mm. Well, we'll table that. I am curious. Mm-hmm. But we can table it for now. I saw something and I thought this would be a great opportunity for Todd, and I feel like he should jump on it. If you're looking to take your home-based business one step further and maybe expand into some new opportunities, there are not just one, but several. I did a little digging after I got the initial forward. Ghost towns for sale.
Oh.
And for some reason, this just struck me as Todd would be into this.
There's two. You sent me one that was in Connecticut. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So there's one in Connecticut. There's one in Oregon that I thought was less exciting, but it was what introduced me to the concept. It's a timber town named Tiller in Oregon. For $3.5 million, you get six houses, a general store, a gas station, the land under the post office, which I guess maybe the post office itself doesn't come with because it probably belongs to the government.
Yes.
You get water rights, and so you can go prospecting, find yourself some water. and you get all the infrastructure that includes sidewalks, fire hydrants, and a working power plant.
Ooh.
You don't get the elementary school.
Wait, I'd like to know what kind of power plant that is. Like, is it nuclear?
Doesn't say.
Because if you bought that and you had a nuclear power plant, I'm sure you can get some guys over, like some millennials, and they could figure out how to start really, you know, mining that uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And then we could become a world power.
Oh, you being the town of Tiller.
Yes.
You would secede. I don't know if the U.S. government is going to let a new nuclear power rise up from the ashes of, you know, the Pacific Northwest.
But what are they going to do? Mutually assured destruction. I'm going to sit there with my nuke and be like, well, you can invade me, or I could take out all of Moab, Utah. Right?
Oh. I mean, do you have the infrastructure to get it to Moab?
I mean,
are you putting it in the back of an old station wagon?
I mean, that would work, right? Like, it just has to get out of there.
I mean, once you're in the interior, there's not a lot of papers, please, happening.
Yeah. Well, what you got to do is you just have to get it far enough so it doesn't disturb where you are, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, a normal nuke, what, is going to destroy about 30 miles?
PPP not happy with the way this conversation's going, by the way. Finger hovering over the dump button. Very nervous.
So I just got to move the A-bomb like 30 miles out, and then also you have to figure out the way the wind's blowing so you're not getting that fallout,
mm-hmm.
right? So you don't have a bunch of like thalidomide babies.
I'm assuming that at this point there's just music playing on the station and Pete's just letting us talk our way out of this.
I'm talking in hypotheticals.
That's totally hypothetical. Anyway, yeah. So, doesn't say if it's a nuke plant, but we know the plan if it was one. There are potential buyers for it, unfortunately. So it may have been snapped up by now. Because I got this a couple weeks ago. So I thought, that's interesting. But it's like an old logging town and it's tiny. You don't even get the school. You have to buy it separately.
It's kind of like Twin Peaks.
It's not really a ghost town either, right? Like, it's just an empty town. Mm. I look for a little more ghost in my ghost towns, which led me to the one that I then passed to you, Todd, which was right. Johnsonville, Connecticut.
I'm very excited about this place.
Yeah, so I felt like you would probably have more plans around Johnsonville. So Johnsonville is a Connecticut ghost town in King Arthur's Court. It's just every time I say Connecticut ghost town, my brain tries to complete the sentence. It's like a bad Google autocomplete.
Well, it's actually the first literary joke you've ever made in the entire 11 years I've worked with you. It's the first time. Not even like a Dickensian joke has ever been made out of the mouth of Mark Chambers.
It's maybe the last. I mean, I've just exhausted all of them. Connecticut ghost town sits abandoned among the state's namesake river, complete with, and I like all of these list the infrastructure you get. So a post office. So you get the post office, not just the land under it. A church, which is important, a bank, mm-hmm. and a smattering of Victorian era structures.
Oh.
This is like when you're at a garage sale and there's the miscellaneous box. It's like a smattering of other Victorian era structures, miscellaneous structures. The quaint hamlet of Johnsonville, once a flourishing mill town, which is, I guess, different than a timber town.
No, they're I milling. Think it's the same.
Is
I think
it the
you're
same?
Milling. You're milling up. You're milling up there, and then on the west coast, you're timbering.
Okay, but it's 1.9 mil, so it's actually cheaper, but it seems more attractive. It's been vacant for 20 years.
Okay.
It's got a schoolhouse and a stable.
Oh.
Round out the old-timey buildings around the Johnsonville Mill Pond. And there is a twine factory. Oh, well. So the twine factory apparently burned down. I think they may have rebuilt it. It's the details are vague. Nevertheless, the twine factory is included. Not sure if it's fully standing or if it's sort of half burned down, but it's there. And it's actually been used to film several music videos and movies.
Well, the great thing is that it gives us an export, right? Like, you just mm-hmm. got to start there. You're like, what do we have? If I can create my kind of closed-off community that I want, that's going to be kind of a perfect utopia based around my own values, morals, fashion sense. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to need an export. And twine never goes out of style. Like, people can talk about all their Ubers and all their Chipotles these days. But twine, you need. How are you going to bind things together? You need twine. Well, you know, my wife the other day sent me to Target, and I had no... she sent me to go buy some twine because we were doing, like, a hipster birthday party for a one-year-old. And, you know, with the... like the Native American stuff, like the arrows and everything, and it said Wild One, and I could not find some good rustic-looking twine for that thing. So I figured that I can be the exporter that makes it happen, and I know it's not quite as profitable as, like, you know, holding some kind of nuclear advantage over the rest of the country and world,
mm-hmm.
For as far out as I can get the nuclear wessel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right, but I think I can make this happen, and then I can kind of create this utopian society that I've dreamed of for ages.
Okay, so you've got your twine, right? You've got your chief exports. We're gonna put aside all the, you know, cultural appropriation involved in the birthday party you were apparently throwing,
mm-hmm.
and we're gonna stay focused. So you've got your income, and now you've got your perfect utopia. What is that? Like, what are you the mayor of this town? Are you just what are you building? I don't understand. What do you so you clearly need the money. You need the exports to have like a functioning, like, you're not, this is not just something you're going to do once and pay for yourself and then walk away from.
No, it's like Hugo Chavez, he had oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
He saw that, you know, the Shell oil, all the American oil companies were stealing his natural resources. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to reclaim the twine.
Okay.
Right? I'm going to profit off of that, and then I'm going to build this town. Now, with the profits as a twine magnate, I'm going to be able to employ a whole bunch of people to play pivotal roles in my life.
Okay.
That will kind of create this little utopia. Like, I'll have my own bar that'll be filled with, like, colorful fake locals and a bartender that knows what I drink.
Okay.
And he'll ask me about my problems, and all the fake locals will have their own fake problems.
Okay, so are you writing all that? I mean, is this? I'm trying to get to the core of the need that Todd Perry is trying to fulfill here. So is your goal? You're going to write all these characters? I mean, are you essentially like the guy from Westworld, where he's writing all the storylines for all the people? Like you're going to come up with all these shenanigans, or is someone doing that for you so that you can just experience it?
Well, first of all, I only watched like the first couple episodes of Westworld, so then I feel kind of screwed here.
Okay. Well, you know, listen, it's a totally original concept.
So what happens is, I'm going to kind of do that, but here, I'm going to create the primordial ooze and then let it go. Like, I'm not going to, retire to my colonial home at night and then start writing what happens to Bill at the bar, who's a friend of mine and gets me my drinks for free. I'm gonna let him run with it, right?
Okay.
But then people can also be fired out of this as well.
Oh, so again, like, just to be clear, these are employees. Like, these are not like people that you've recruited to come live at the town. These are people that are kind of being paid to be part of the town, which includes living there. But they're just staff.
Right. So they all have some kind of dramatic sort of Damocles over their head that they have to perform, right?
Okay.
But part of performing doesn't necessarily involve making me feel good. It also involves challenging me in a way I want to be challenged, right? So you got to be able to read me. But I'm going to have, like, a barber in town.
Okay, okay.
A preacher.
Okay.
Who might be kind of crooked, you know?
A crooked preacher?
He's a man of the cloth, but also he's, like, on the take, right?
Okay, but what is he... who is he taking money from? Like, what influence is he peddling?
Gods? He's fleecing the old women in town, obviously.
Obviously. But they're getting paid to be fleeced.
Yeah, true. But I'm bought into it, right?
Okay, you're fully bought. So this is more about you. So I have so many questions. I mean, I fear we don't have enough time to get into all my questions, but so if you're paying all these people and you're constructing this whole world, right? And so I'm brought in, and let's say I'm Bill Johnson.
Oh.
A famed actor. Star of stage and screen, but not really, right? Like, I'm good, I'm really good, but I never broke out in the public eye, right? So it's not going to take you out of it if you see me.
Well, it will, because we've done radio together for years, and then into town, we have a backstory.
Okay, okay, so maybe it's not me. Maybe I just pretend, we'll put me into it in a second. Maybe it's just, this is just some actor who's been hired, presumably by your, like, chief of staff.
Yeah.
To come be, a member of this community. Am I always on, or do I have like a shift? Do I get to go back to being Bill Johnson at night? Like, if I'm asleep, am I sleeping as the character? Like, do I go home ever? Like, do I see my family?
Well, that's the trick, isn't it?
Oh. Oh.
Like, you have to be ready.
Oh, God.
At any moment. Like, you can have downtime. You may have a day of downtime. There may be a day when I don't go to the community theater, which I pay for with my twine money, and I want to go see, another performance of the Vagina Monologues.
Okay.
Starring this famed star of stage and screen.
Mm-hmm.
But you better be ready to perform when I, text you, or whether I ring the community bell.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk out there, and then everybody flocks to go to the show, right?
So wait, are you the mayor, or do you just live here, but it's all built for your amusement? Or, like, do we know you're important, or are you just a member of the community that happens to be the only one that's not an actor?
I think we better know that I'm important.
Okay.
But I'm not like the mayor. I'm like Michael Jackson at Neverland Ranch.
Okay.
Minus the kid stuff, right?
So everything but that.
But, I mean, there will be children around, but they will only be there to prove the fact that I'm not touching any children.
Okay,
right?
So, I mean, is there someone, like, checking up on that? Is there, like, a safety inspector?
Correct.
Do the kids have to work, like, they have those child labor laws when it comes to child actors? So Is it like, oh, hey, Timmy, and we all as actors have to realize that there's like four different kids that play the same kid?
I mean, you could realize it, but don't let me know that.
We have to pretend that it's always the same kid, even though, and you're going to pretend? Or do you need to get swept away in it? I don't understand.
No, I need to get swept away in it. It's kind of like,
okay,
like how do you get swept away in anything? Like, I normally watch like sports, right? And you mm-hmm. know, at the end of the day, like, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
You know, right? Like, in the end, I know that if the Dodgers don't win the World Series this year, it doesn't matter, right? If the Raiders win or lose, it actually does matter. And, you know, it does affect my emotional and physical health and that of my family, right?
Sure, sure.
But most sports, besides Raider games, don't really matter, right?
Right.
But you can get involved in it for an entire season, right?
Sure.
And this is going to be me, but just in perpetuity, in this town that I purchase.
Is there crime in this town?
Mm-hmm. We do have one criminal.
Okay.
And then, but the thing is, we also have one cop.
Okay.
And he's kind of like Andy from Twin Peaks, or like Chief Brody's like assistant in the Jaws movies, Jeffrey mm-hmm. or whatever. And he's kind of bumbling, a little Barney Fife-ish. He likes to come by my house and like have a cocktail from time to time, but not too many, you know.
Okay, no, he doesn't want to overindulge.
But he's always kind of on the chase for this one guy who's like half village drunk, half kind of like cat, you know, cat robber.
Okay.
Burglar.
Is he cat robber?
He doesn't steal people's cats, okay? That would be screwed up.
So the cat robber, it's a game of cat robber and mouse.
Yes.
So there's no violent crime in Johnsonville.
Oh, no.
No, no.
Oh, can no, Mark. No, that would not be good.
Are you allowed to kill?
Oh, if I did, I'm not saying I did, but if I were to kill, Mark, no one would know. Sometimes life, it just has to go, Mark.
Oh, God.
It's unbelievable. It's beautiful.
I really don't think this is the best thing for you. I think your current home-based business is probably best for you.
But I can dream out there, Mark. I can have my own things.
I feel like being the proprietor of Johnsonville takes you down a dark path.
I just want you to act, Mark. I want you to go out there and do the vagina monologues.
I don't want to be part of it.
I want you to just go see, express your inner child, Mark.
I don't know that this is the best use of a town that once hosted the film crew of a Cuba Gooding Jr. film.
I met Cuba Gooding.
So that's Todd Perry's Johnsonville.
I'm just saying, I think it would be a great place. I think people would pay to visit as well and take some twine home. Enjoy the show in which Mark has to perform day in and day out the same vagina monologues. Tommy Mottola is the devil.
Taking a break. We'll be back. This is Low Budget. Mark Todd, 103.7 Free FM.
It's Low Budget on San Diego's FM talk station, 103.7 Free FM.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark. That's Todd. Low Budget, 103.7 Free FM. Yeah. You may ask yourself, what am I listening to?
Yeah,
I do that sometimes. You may find yourself behind the wheel of a car with this show on and wonder, why did I do this? Do you like that band?
The funny thing is, I have friends that like freak out and are like, you gotta like listen to this Talking Heads record. Or there's like a Jonathan Demme made a movie about them, which is allegedly very good. But all I know is about five Talking Heads songs that I kind of like.
Hmm.
But evidently there's this whole chunk of other stuff that's really good, you know, that I haven't heard. Well, you know, the funny thing is that like Tina Weymouth, who was like the drummer for this band,
mm-hmm.
she did that What you gonna do when you get out of jail? I'm gonna have some fun. Which seems like totally different genres of music. But same band.
I don't know anything about music. I do know that I feel like it's okay to like that band. This is where I start to get tricky. Like, I hear that song and I'm like, you like that song, and you've got oh, there's hipster opinions about like other projects those people have done, but I never know when I hear a song anymore if I'm allowed to like it or if I'm gonna say like, oh, it's a good band, and someone's gonna be like, of course you like that band, of course, and then I'm never gonna be able to get them to explain why that's bad.
Well, the weird thing is you've said that band the whole time, but I don't think you know the band's name.
I don't. I mean, listen, if I were in the other room where they were playing the music from, I could just look at the screen and tell you.
The band's called the Talking Heads.
The Talking Heads.
Yeah.
I just said I don't know anything about music.
Late 70s, early 80s. But I mean, given your age, that it's kind of okay that you're not completely in the know about the Talking Heads.
Okay. I'll take it.
I'll give you that.
I struggle with this. I mean, I think the problem I have is I never know when I'm walking into when it comes to music and whether or not I'm going to say something that's like either like an unpopular take or something where it's like, oh, a very pedestrian take or something that's like out of line with the status quo. Like, sometimes I'll text you and be like, hey, what's the current take that folks like us are supposed to have on X?
Because
I don't know.
And it's becoming harder and harder. And that's because We live in a world that is now kind of not really in any one generation, right? Like, I think that if you grew up in the 70s, you probably didn't listen to a lot of 30s music, right?
Right.
You just were, like, listening to, you know, your Bachman-Turner Overdrive and your Led Zeppelin and your Kinks and your Loving Life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the people in the 80s weren't listening to a lot of 40s music, right?
Sure.
But everybody now in the, 2010s, like, should know something about, like, the big acts of the 60s, big acts of the 70s, 80s, 90s, right? And should have an opinion on all of them because all the music is right at your fingertips. Like, you should have not missed out on great music. But also, given that access to music, there's a lot of stuff you should not have wasted your time with.
Yeah, and that's the part where it starts to kind of fall apart for me. Like, I don't know what opinions I'm allowed to have anymore, or what I'm supposed to have, and I certainly don't have time to form them all.
But there's only one opinion you should have, to be fair. We've talked about this. There's that one overarching opinion that everybody should have.
Which is what?
I think we can feel it.
Okay. You don't want to get in, it's fine. I'm just saying, I got into this the other day with someone because we were talking about going to the Olive Garden. Oh. And it was just like, you know, oh, you know, the growing up in the Midwest or in the South, whatever, you know, you go to the OG. It's a good time. I'm like, oh, yeah,
called
yeah.
The OG there?
Yeah, the OG. You go to the OG, the Olive Garden. And it's like, oh, it's a good time. Yeah, unlimited breadsticks and the soup. And they got the pasta and the Hospitaliano and Italian margaritas, blah, blah. It's come up on the show before, too, I'm sure. And it's just like, it's a good time. And then I'm like, you know, I'm laughing. They're laughing. We're both laughing. And then I kind of lean in and squint. And I'm like, wait, I'm not kidding. Like, are you? Because I actually really like it. And, you know, I've had that conversation with a few people. And, like, one time I've gotten like, oh, me too, because they're also from like the Midwest, and I'm like, that's awesome. But then usually it's like, no, I was totally kidding. That it's disgusting. I would only eat there ironically, and I'm like, I unironically love themed chain restaurants. Like, not a very popular opinion to hold.
Among peers. Yeah, the only as someone who grew up in the Southern California area, and it's not even like I grew up rich at all in the Southern California area, but there is a certain amount of, I don't know, appreciation for food or appreciation for culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just kind of runs normally in a metropolitan area, in which Olive Garden was always outside of that, And Olive Garden was always where the people from the ghetto, like, if the people from the ghetto were going out, like, for a big night, they went to Olive Garden.
Okay.
If you grew up really disenfranchised or, like, a first immigration, you know, first generation immigrant, that's where you went for a special night before you went to prom, right? And if you grew up more middle class, that's where you went just because you had to have lunch in a mall, right?
Yeah, I mean, and again, like, I grew up in a, I guess, poor area, but you didn't feel poor, right? Like, there was no real basis for comparison. And we went to the, we did go to the Olive Garden before prom. I mean, we just did. That was a thing that happened. It
like,
was the
I
nicest.
I went, like, I grew up pretty, like, you know, working class, and Olive Garden was fancy till I was about 23.
Okay.
Right? And then it became like, well, why don't I go to a local Italian place, right?
But
that
how
is
do you
probably
going to
be tastier.
Like, you don't just independently know that, right? Like, no one just intuits that a locally owned Italian place is going to be better food than the Olive Garden. Because, first of all, it's not guaranteed.
Right? It's not guaranteed, but you do know that places like the Olive Garden, what they do is they freeze the food. And then they bring it out, like, microwave it and, like, throw it in a pan real quick and cook it. So eventually you realize that the local place that might have gone through a little bit more of a fresher process with the food, that might be kind of more into creating a real environment versus a chain thing, which is, you know, it's really based on the bottom line, right, is going to do a better job at presenting and giving you a good meal.
But no one realizes any of that. You're taught all that. Like, all those words you just said are not intuitive.
I think you are. And then also you go, oh, I kind of like the local place better than the chain.
You think people just come to these decisions on their own?
They might.
Which is why you've
know.
Never
I,
seen
I mean,
anyone over the age of 22 inside of an Olive Garden.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think that, I mean, unless your local Italian place is crap, and then you go to the Olive Garden, right?
But why would you think to go there? I mean, this is the part that we're not connecting on, right? Like, this is why.
Because it's in your neighborhood, and you're like, I drove by that Italian place. That sounds good, right?
But if you've been driving by it for 5 years, why are you suddenly trying it?
Because now you can drive, right? Because now you're 22. You're taking broads out and taking tour chain. Just isn't cool, man.
But why isn't it cool?
It isn't because it's like mass-produced art, right? Like, if you go to a Sears and buy a painting, chances are there's not a lot of artistic merit to it, right? For the most part.
That's a complex concept, right? Like, this, if we're talking about someone who's trying to, like, who's kind of, like, coming into these things new and fresh and they're intuiting their way through this, it's going to come down to something more base level, right?
Yeah, like, the first thing you jump at is, like, the first thing somebody likes artistically is going to be, like, an awesome landscape, right? Mm-hmm. They'd be like, that looks just like the beach, right? Mm-hmm. But as they get older and they realize that making something that looks just like the beach does take talent, but it takes way more talent to come up with, like, some fresh, weird twist on something, then they're going to start liking other artistic ideas, right? Like, when you're 12, you want to hear, like, What I Like About You by the Romantics, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I Like About You. It's a very basic song, very basic chord structure, and it's all about, like, I like a chick, and that's the way it goes. But your emotions get more complex. Your feelings about society get more complex. And you're like, well, Radiohead kind of talked to the complexity of love in a deeper and more rewarding way than What I Like About You by the Romantics.
Now, first, ignoring the fact that Radiohead is not by any means a popular band.
I think they're a very popular band.
They had popular songs. But, like, there's a subsection of people who are called music fans versus just people that listen to music. And then there's a subsection of them that would like Radiohead. And they're probably all from the same generation.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, so it's like a sliver of a sliver of a slice.
Yeah, but I think they're a band kind of like Pink Floyd, right? That, like, hardcore music fans in that time, like, in 20 years, my kid will probably like Radiohead, right?
Your kid will.
Right.
But actually, even not that great of a chance because you do, which means that, like, the reason that we're getting it, like, the reason it's unpopular for us to like chain restaurants as a generation is because our parents did.
Maybe so.
It's like people keep going back and forth between the suburbs and the city every couple of generations.
Right. I mean, but the thing is, it was like I was in Vegas with some like 70-year-old guys recently, and they were like,
just glossing over that.
No, but I'm making a point based on your point, which is like, and they were like the old Vegas, and they were all telling, and that was of the generation that would supposedly like the chain restaurant, loved the old Vegas when it was kind of mob run and it was kind of dingy, and it was shady as hell, and that same generation liked that version of Vegas versus the cartoonish Vegas that we get now.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I think the point that you're making there isn't that, like, those two points conflict. It's just that people like things the way they were when they were of the age where people's opinions were formed and locked in.
That could be it, yeah.
I mean, like, if Vegas was like that when you were in your 20s, then that's the Vegas you like.
Right.
I mean, my parents were saying this when I was in my, like, you know, teens. They're like, Vegas is family friendly now. Have you heard? Like, it was a new thing, you know, when I was in my teens. It's like, oh, Vegas, that's a thing you can just bring people to now. That's not how it used to be, you know, but they meant like 5 years ago, you know? So it's, I don't know. I think it's, I run into the problem of like the Olive Garden one is an obvious unpopular opinion, right? Like saying right. You like that is just going to get you the same speech you just gave me. I've heard it like, you know, dozens of times.
You
put it the best. I feel like you are the only person who's ever given it that, which is why I sit here across from you, that actually had put your own thought into it, right?
Well, no, I'm somebody that had grown up like working class in the point to where like Olive Garden was a special meal.
Also true. You've been on both sides of it.
I had to rationalize to myself why I eventually had that meal at Olive Garden was like, this isn't that great.
Yeah, you right? Most people have read their opinion on something like that.
Yes.
Or heard
it. I don't know. I mean, it's easy to just, you know, assume other people aren't thinking deeply about things.
It's easy because if you talk to 10 people and they all say the same thing and you're like, I read that Slate article.
Right.
I mean, like the best way to determine, I mean, it's not easy to know if people aren't thinking deeply. It's actually very easy to know if people are thinking deeply. It starts with you having thought deeply and then you ask a follow-up.
Right. Okay.
One will usually do it, right? Like just ask one follow-up that if you're well-read on the internet and you have any sort of base knowledge of the topic, ask something that wasn't from the article that everyone's read.
Well, you know, the thing that hurts me on this whole discussion is that actually like Red Lobster?
Mm-hmm.
Have you been to a Red Lobster in the last 10 years?
I haven't, but I really want to go.
The thing is, Red Lobster was, when I was like 15, what was like pretty much like Spago. Right? Like it was like the most exclusive thing when I was 15 you could ever do was eat at Red Lobster.
Okay.
And I got like accepted to Boys State, which was like only two guys from every high school got to go in Sacramento, California. And he made like a mock government thing. Like Bill Clinton went to it when he was, you know, his age in Arkansas or whatever. And my dad took me out to Red Lobster for it. And it was like the greatest meal. It was the most lavish thing I ever had. I got a gift certificate recently to Red Lobster, and it was one of the worst meals I've ever eaten. And it's not because I'm uppity. It was like literally like an inch of grease on top of things. And both me and my wife were like, this is terrible. And then I got another gift certificate and we went back and it still kept just to being terrible food.
Are you going to the same one each time?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, okay.
Maybe every other Red Lobster is fantastic.
No, I doubt it. First of all, I haven't seen a Red Lobster in a neighborhood that I would consider, quote, good in many years. But that's because of where I live, right? Like if I lived somewhere a little more middle class and a little less coastal, you know, they would probably be just generally nicer because they're not, you know, just appealing to like that demographic, right? Like they're the nicest restaurant in town. Like you're not going to go to a Red Lobster here and then assume that all Red Lobsters are like that, right? Like there's going to be places where the people care more and, you know, like the person managing that is probably in the top 20% of earners in the region, you know, versus the bottom 20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is you need to get on a plane.
I need to go to the Midwest. I need to go to Cleveland.
I was going to say go to Ohio. Yeah, go to Cleveland.
Well, here's the thing. And you say this, and the thing is, when I go to the Red Lobster by my house, it's 70% African-American people that eat there.
Mm.
And I feel like maybe the people, knowing that they have African-American clientele, are cheapening the service and the food for Black America.
That is a bold stance, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably not wrong.
When Red Lobster served white America, until the black man realized he could get a good deal on shellfish, and then they just started making crappy food. They're screwing the black man, I think. I'm standing up.
Is that an unpopular opinion, or would that be an accepted opinion that you just said? Are you going to get hate for that, or are you going to get applaud for that?
I don't know. I want all the brothers and sisters that listen to the show to hit us up on @LowBudgetFM and tell me your opinion of Red Lobster, and tell me if they're serving or underserving your community.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And then if the good people of Red Lobster would like to write in as well.
I think they're afraid. They know what they're doing.
They know. Yeah.
I saw them underserve the black community right beneath my nose.
You were right there. But weren't you also complaining that you got terrible service?
Yes.
Or is it just that you're in the system that was designed?
Well, I mean, it's like there's a big pot of like lobster mac, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like they're like, all right, there's 10 black guys out there eating a lobster mac and one white guy. All right. Well, they weren't going to make one portion good for the white guy.
Mm-hmm.
They were just going to burn their bridges with the Caucasian community with the lobster mac that I was served.
I'm usually think like we came into the studio and we sat down and we discussed trite things. I didn't know when I woke up this morning that we were going to fix race relations before 10 p.m.
Well, I think that, you know, Red Lobster is the vehicle in which all Americans can kind of descend and have an opinion.
Mm, okay. Like, there's literally no one in America, unless you're like, you know, shaving off the edge cases, that hasn't at least experienced Red Lobster once and has an opinion on it.
Well, the only thing is, like, the Jews aren't involved because they don't eat shellfish.
Okay. So we're, again, edge cases. We're going to round them all off.
I don't want you saying I want to round off the Jews, because that's weird.
I was repeating what you said in a different way. I said round off the edge cases, and you said the juice.
Talking about unpopular opinions.
Yes.
I'm over craft beer.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
But it's delicious.
No. So what I realized recently was that, you know, when I have a Sculpin or a Stone IPA or anything that's now went from California about 4 years ago and is now making its way across the center of the country, right? And probably making the East Coast, because the East Coast, they don't really brew. I feel like that's more like a wine area, or where mm-hmm. you're drinking kind of Euro stuff.
Okay.
But what happened was, for a long time, like, I was drinking craft brews all the time. Like, you know, I'd have a buddy come by and he'd bring a big, huge, like, growler. And he'd be like, this is like the Hoppinator thing. And it's 9% and blah, 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 blah. And what I realized was that I just liked the fact that the beer was 9%.
Mm-hmm.
That actually, I don't like how it tastes, because it's like really hoppy and it gives you indigestion. And it's such an intense taste on most craft, like really hoppy IPAs, that mm-hmm. it's like the first two sips are good. But now I got to go through 16 ounces more, and then I'm going to have like four more of these beers, right?
Yeah. So you're telling me when if I come by for the fourth, I shouldn't bring a growler of Hoppelstiltskin?
No. You get rid of that. Like, no little hop of horrors.
Okay.
No hop in the name of love.
For some reason, I went to John Hopkins.
No. I don't want to have the Hopacost brew. Okay. Hop suey. Bride of Hoppenstein. No, here's the thing. Like, and you'll have that, and it's always like I get bombarded. I mean, maybe given my age, maybe I hang around a bunch of like 40-year-old dudes that have enough money to like waste on expensive beer. But at this point, I just want something I can drink a lot of that's high in alcohol content, right? So what I would really like is some kind of crisp Pilsner that's 9% versus something that's going to give me indigestion and taste like I just ate a big bale of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like when I'm eating this, I just see like communist propaganda from like the 20s where they're like, and they have sickles and they're like shoving the wheat, and you're like, I'm just putting it down my throat and it's burning everything, and I'm doing this for in the hot sun for 5 goddamn hours.
You know, craft brewers are working really hard to bring you all of these amazing new flavors and experiences, and you're equating it to some kind of communist propaganda short film cartoon thing.
Which is fair, I mean.
Is it?
Okay. I mean, the thing is, like, I've been drinking this crap for a long time, and the first time I was like, all right, we're all getting a buzz, right? This is great. Like, I have two of these, and I'm effed up. But then I have buddies that are like, can you taste the choicest wheat? Like, wheat doesn't taste that good. Like, can you taste the choicest hops, right? Can you? And I'm like, this isn't wine. Like, wine I can get weird on when I'm drinking it, right?
Here's what you do. I'm just saying, here's what you do. You go the other way. Like, how I am eschewing Amazon from my life for many reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going around telling people, like, I'm getting Amazon out of my life because of their business practices and I'm a hipster and blah, 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 I'm falling back on, like, I just find it quaint and charming to go shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be like, it's some kind of normcore throwback retro movement to be like, I just, like to sit around in my American flag shirt drinking a can of Bud.
Like, I went to 7-Eleven and got this beer, right?
Yeah. And they're like, oh, man, that's so cool. Because, like, they've never done that, but they've heard about it and they've seen it on TV.
Like, the thing is, I get a lot of crap from my friends because I really enjoy Bud Light Platinum.
Mm-hmm. But you should. I mean, you should get crap for that. Yeah, I know. I've witnessed it.
And you've tasted it, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
But don't ever diss the fact that this is a crisp tasting. It's not terrible tasting beer, correct?
Okay, no.
And it packs a really good buzz because it's like 6%. Now, if you made like an 8% Bud Light Platinum, I wouldn't touch your Russian Red River or your Sculpin IPA, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or your Pliny the Elder,
mm-hmm.
right? Or Pliny the Younger, or all the stuff that the guy like spent $40 for a 16-ouncer on, right?
And these are all real, sadly. No.
This is every weekend of my life.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I started to think, maybe this is BS, right? Maybe no one really enjoys this. We all got sucked into this thing. Mm-hmm. And then one day on Facebook, one of my buddies who's like a total hipster,
mm-hmm.
huge hipster, who lives in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And one day he just wrote, Dad beer, all the MF and way, F this craft brew BS, Coors.
Wow. So he woke up.
Yeah, he got woke. Like, we were all in this dilemma that craft beer was great. And now, here's the thing. I'm telling everybody who listens to the show right now, this is your permission. This is the first guy liberating you from the shackles of indigestion creating beer that you know you don't like.
Unplugging them from the millennial matrix, as it were.
Yes, and Gen X is like really guilty of all of this as well.
Okay. So if I can put the blame on them, that'd be fine. Because it's a very millennial trait to blame elders.
Or it could be an exennial thing.
What's that? What's that?
That was the thing you sent me.
Oh, God. I don't know.
That there's a new group, which is the exennials, which actually encapsulates both you and me, which is between Gen X and millennial.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this. This is if you grew up analog and transitioned into digital after you were already kind of an adult.
Right.
That was one of the defining characteristics. Like, when you were born, there was no internet. And at some point during your life, it was in, kind of came into your life.
Yeah, but I transitioned at a much later age than you.
That's true. Yeah, I was on that internet before I got out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
That internet, though.
That internet, though.
Taking a break. We'll be back to wrap up. This is Low Budget Mark Tab, 103.7 Free FM.
It's Low Budget on San Diego's FM talk station, 103.7 Free FM.
It's time for the Low Budget News Virus. On 103.7 Free FM.
From your newswire. Women absorb and retain DNA from every man they've had sex with.
Oh, good.
Women retain and carry living DNA from every man with whom they've had sexual intercourse, according to a new study by the University of Seattle and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center.
Why would Fred Hutchinson do this to us? He, of all people, should know.
Do you know?
What?
Do you know who he is and what he's done?
I don't.
Of course he'd do this to us, Mark. The study found that female brains often harbor male microchimerism.
What? Is that like an orgasm?
Very small one.
Very micro orgasms.
Like if you just kind of work one part and not both, you know?
Okay, I see. I don't really understand how female orgasms work, I'm not going to lie.
Nah, me neither.
I've read about them.
I've been working towards them for quite some time, but it really hasn't happened.
You'll get there. This is your decade.
Yeah. Or in other words, the presence of male DNA that originated from another individual and are genetically distinct from the cells that make up the rest of the woman.
So let's...
63% of women carry male DNA cells that live in their brains. Obviously, the researchers wanted to know where the male DNA came from.
Oh, God.
Is it from
this
the women's
This is really
fathers?
Unfortunate news. I don't know that I wanted to know this.
So it's not from the women's fathers. And it's not from children that they may have had.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only according to the scientists, the possible sources of the male DNA cells living in the women's brains are A, an abortion the woman didn't know about.
Oh, God.
It's highly unlikely. Most women remember all their abortions.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. A male twin that vanished.
Oh.
Not
okay.
likely. Not likely. But I
like that option.
In 63% of women.
Mm-hmm.
An older brother transferred by the maternal circulation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also mm-hmm. good.
And then D, most likely sexual intercourse.
That's not the good one.
So, you know, there are two or three women right now, Mark, mm-hmm. probably somewhere between Florida and California, that mm-hmm. actually have your DNA swimming in their minds, because evidently women's brains are sponges with other men's DNA.
Wait, two or three?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I know you've been with women that you had as girlfriends and everything, but I don't know if you actually slept with them or had unprotected sex with them.
True. Also a good point. Well, this is just a really good note. You know who's really upset about this news is Maverick Jack.
Mm.
This is affecting him deeply.
I mean, because he quite frequently brags about not bagging it. But now, just think about every woman in the future, when you mount her, when you attempt
uh-huh.
to make her yours,
uh-huh.
she has other dude's DNA in her brain. Like, maybe you can see it in her eyes.
I am thinking about it right now. It's really unfortunate. I'm glad we were able to squeeze that in. The news story, I mean.
Squeeze that in. To the brains of our listeners.
Maverick Jack is next. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.